7:70 a.m. Well, I just jumped right in it, Copper. I just went right back to my old habits. I just jumped right in with feet first. Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, where Phil has been saying the same thing every day for a year and is struggling to get out of his habits. Okay, anyway, we're back, Right Side Radio. And yes, we are still solid, conservative, and just plain right. Yeah, I got a caller online, too, that's held on during the break, so thank you for that. And Steve from Huntsville, how you doing, man?
Hey, guy. Great. Congratulations. Want to say thank you for the show. It's certainly all right to honk your horn because you're doing such a great job, such a service. Thanks for your service and everything you bring to the show. It's quite an interesting mix of your talents and skills that you bring to bear. In your perspective. So thank you. Thanks to the staff. Thanks for the guests that you have. But I want to bring up one little interesting topic that I have discovered recently.
Yeah, man. Thank you, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And the T-shirt. Man, that's a great T-shirt. Love you sent me a T-shirt a little while back, and I love it. Love it. Great
good
shirt.
Deal. Good deal. Thank you for those compliments, by the way. And this is not the Phil Williams show. I mean, I didn't even feel good about naming it that. This is really, it's Right Side Radio. Somebody else could take the mic and the show could still go on, but thank you very much.
You're welcome. Keep it up. Just keep it up. Something I discovered recently, and I'll say this to all fellow conservative folks. We've been beat down and frowned on and just made fun of and demonized for so long. We kind of don't want to talk about it sometimes. We don't want to bring it up. We'll just carry it around. But I have discovered recently, being an old retired guy, a former civil servant, you can talk about this stuff. If you're careful with your audience, and you just bring – it's easy now with the economy and shortages and all that stuff to bring things up in this sorry state of affairs we found ourselves in. There are a lot of people that feel like we do. They will talk to you if you'll just kind of broach the subject and don't be afraid to make a comment or two. And, boy, people will open up. It's amazing how many times people will open up about what's bothering them in our beautiful country today. So,
man, you are so right.
Talk it up, folks.
You are so right. In fact, it's funny, Steve, you said that because I literally just – my wife, I mentioned in my monologue that my wife always says there's more of us than there are of them. But she just texted me and said, yeah. But I also say if they don't speak up, it doesn't matter. And you're – so it's right, exactly on right. Point what you just said.
Well, we're so used to the vocal ones out there, and we have a lot of power with our voice. And when we're right, how can you argue we're accurate? We're correct. You know, we're not making stuff up. We've got facts behind what we say, not yeah. The feelings. Oh, I feel that. Oh, my feelings are such and such. You know, we've got the facts, and we can be calm and clear-headed about presenting them and talk to folks. It's okay. It's
good
okay.
Stuff, man. Hey, Steve, what a great phone call. Thanks for being a part of the audience. You continue to be a Right Side Ruffian. We appreciate you, and you have a great day.
I am a ruffian.
Yes, you are indeed. All right. Thanks, man. All right, listen, folks. Let me jump into number one of the. What a great call, by the way. How do you get away from the fact that we have the coolest audience? Boomer, you're still getting used to our audience, but we have absolutely the coolest audience in the world. I'm just telling you.
I am getting used to them in here, but I have loved listening to them when I've been listening to your show.
Yeah, well, and they never cease to amaze. I mean, I'm pretty sure that like a bunch of my audience could just host this show and probably do a darn good job at it.
They're pretty incredible.
Yeah, they are indeed. All right, man. Hey, listen, I'm going to jump into number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Fielding the Force. So go with me on this. If you look around right now, the state of military readiness, it's drawing some attention from those who pay attention to, you know, geopolitical affairs with military strategy built in. It's getting some attention because the Biden administration is doing more right now to harm military readiness than perhaps we've ever seen. I do not want to go back to the days of what my dad used to call the Hollow Army. Those of y'all who don't know me, I'm generational Army. My grandfather was a retired general. He was post commander at Redstone Arsenal when I was young. World War II veteran, served all the way up through Vietnam. And then my dad, career Army officer also, two tours in Vietnam. And then myself, and we got other family members on active duty now. So I caught a story this morning that really got my attention. And it was a good story. Story on military.com. Military.com dated yesterday Space Command has moved to Space Command's move to Alabama clears an environmental hurdle nearing final approval. So here's the bottom line. It got my attention this morning that we are still seeing good things happening. I don't want to pretend they're not. Like, for instance, in this story on military.com, it says an environmental review has found no problems with the proposed Huntsville site for a new U.S. Space Command headquarters, clearing what could be the last major official hurdle for the new command to move to Alabama, our own U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville said in a press conference yesterday. So now they have this public comment period, and they're going to be doing things. Listen, folks, here's what that's going to do for Alabama. I mean, right now we're a state that down yonder in the Wiregrass, we got Fort Rucker. That's where every Army aviator is trained. We've got the Air War College and all the other assets, plus an entire air wing of F-16s. No, I take it back. They're F-35s, I believe, at Maxwell Air Force Base. And then we also have, oh, by the way, Redstone Arsenal, the home of Material Command, the home for missile defense, centerpiece of a lot of defense contracting. Added to it now, they've put the FBI Training Center there, soon to have Space Command. We also have, by the way, have a very robust National Guard, which I'll get to in a minute. And then we have the Anniston Army Depot. Did you know that almost every vehicle that was damaged requiring stateside repairs in the war had to come back to Anniston Army Depot to be repaired? It's pretty cool when you stop and think about it. Well, add to all of that now, we're looking at, according to this article, 1,800 headquarters staff and their families could move to Huntsville in the near future. Building a new headquarters on the arsenal on a 38,000-acre base, which is already home to five military command headquarters and also the expanding FBI Management Training Center. Alabama is looking at a 464,000-square-foot headquarters building with a 402,000-square-foot parking lot, security, child care, you know, the ability to absorb things. It's going to have a major impact on the economy, but it's also because we are a military-friendly state. We're a place that has quality of life. We're a place that values our veterans. We have one of the highest per capita populations of veterans within the ranks, or excuse me, the ranks, within the population of Alabama. And yet, in the midst of all that, we're looking at an administration in D.C., that still has an ability, obviously, to impact us. I mean, to some degree, you realize they should. That's what they were elected to do, whether you like them or not. They were elected to be able to influence public policy. They won the election, they say. I got problems with that election, but nonetheless, he's in office. I can't do much about the fact that Biden's administration is in office now. And what they're doing to the U.S. military impacts us, even as a military-friendly state, the future home of an entire branch of the service, Space Command. We're looking at, wow, what else is going to happen with the U.S. military? Well, a story on Breitbart got my attention following that one. So Breitbart dated yesterday again. More than 260,000 troops are not fully vaccinated, many of which now face discharge under the Biden administration's mandate. 260,000. That's 13% of our overall 2.1 million total force. That's Army, Navy, Air Force, the Marine Corps, which is a sub of the Navy. Folks, that's a huge deal, but it's added, you're adding to the fact that the current state of affairs with the commander-in-chief and the policies he's putting into the military right now are driving recruiting down to record lows. We have not seen recruiting down this far since the end of the draft in 1972-73, which began the period called the hollow military. My dad referred to it as a hollow army because that's what he was in. And he talked about how disjointed it felt. And you just did your job and hoped things were going to get better. Well, I do want to remind you with a sense of encouragement that we came out of Vietnam and we got rid of the draft. We entered into the period under the Carter era of what we call the hollow military. But in the early 80s, we had the Panama invasion. We had the Grenada invasion. 9-10 years after that, we had Desert Storm, where we proved that the American military could still do an amazing amount of work in a short amount of time. We literally have seen the American military come back from the hollow period And what I'm concerned about is we're about to go hollow for a while and then have to rebuild. 260,000 troops, according to the Department of Defense website, are still not in compliance with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's August 2021 mandate that they all be vaccinated with two doses. And that does not count the thousands who have not taken any doses, apparently. Only about 20,000 of the more than 260,000 have received a temporary or permanent exemption. So what we're looking at here is a situation where literally 13% of our force could be relegated to non-deployable status at the same time that we're seeing recruiting literally at only 40% of the milestones they need to make. In the middle of that, the Army National Guard and Army Reserve recently acknowledged that as many as 60,000 soldiers, that's 12% of the total Army National Guard and Reserve, 60,000 soldiers are not fully vaccinated. And a new directive came out that says that they will not receive pay and benefits for any duty they perform. Folks, I'm telling you, this is a dire time. We're going to come back from this break. Let's go ahead and take a break, Copper. We'll come back from this break. I want to sort of put that together and package it up for you a little bit more. And then top of the hour, a friend of mine, Colonel Jim Hawkins, who had a senior position within the Alabama National Guard. We're going to talk about what this is going to do to readiness just in Alabama alone. And folks, if you think that Alabama's National Guard is strong, wait till I tell you what all is in it that you might not be aware of. We have one of the most robust and elite National Guards in the entire nation. And right now, 18% of Alabama's National Guard, 18%, is on the chopping block. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams from the Right Side Studios here in local, state, national. All the issues, y'all. That's what I'm saying. And we handle it solid, conservative, and just plain right. So I'm in this section right now on the Triple Dipper I call Fielding the Force. What does it take to field a robust fighting force? Well, let me just pause for a minute and just jump back on that National Guard piece a moment. I had a moment ago. I spent a lot of years in the Alabama National Guard, and I'm going to tell you right now, you literally, Alabamians, you have one of the most elite National Guards in the nation. And let me just make sure that I describe that effectively for you. Because no longer, or this is not the old school National Guard. Not that there was ever anything wrong with it. I'm just saying there used to be a time and a place in sort of the military parlance where they were called the weekend warriors, and they had the lesser of the equipment. Not anymore. The Goldwater-Nichols Act changed some of that, but then you also have 9/11, which increased the operational tempo of the National Guard such that there is a mandate from D.C. now. National Guard Bureau has status. There is a member of the Joint Chiefs that is a National Guard's general. And you also, by the way, have the fielding of equipment at tier one levels, generally speaking, and they may not be first in line, but they get all the same stuff. And when you go down range, you can't tell anymore who's guard and who's not. Some of the finest people that I served with, let me just tell you, my first tour was in Afghanistan. In the beginning of the war, on a small special operations team, I was in a remote location in Kunduz, Afghanistan, riding horses, growing a beard, the whole thing. And the guys that I was with, West Virginia National Guard Special Forces, 19th Special Forces Group, doing the deed. I got to Baghdad. When I first got to Baghdad in 2004, I was assigned to an infantry battalion out of the 1st Armored Division, active duty guys. Okay. You know what? 3 months later, they rotated out. You know who rotated in? A battalion of infantry from the Oregon National Guard, who were some of the finest soldiers I ever served with. Highly professional, highly competent, and highly decorated, by the way. I'm just telling you, the National Guard is a robust element. Right here in Alabama, let me tell you what you have in case you didn't know. I mean, especially if you've got somebody in your family who's thinking, man, I wish I could just, you know, join the guard or do something, but I don't want to just, you know, I don't want to do something lightweight. No, I got news. Here in Alabama, there are only two National Guard Special Forces. That's Green Berets. There are only two National Guard Special Forces groups. One of them is the 20th Special Forces Group, which is headquartered right here in Alabama. I spent a lot of years in 20th Group. You want to jump out of an airplane? You want to be a Green Beret? You want to be a member of a Special Operations Support Battalion? You want to be a parachute rigger? All of those are right here in the Alabama National Guard. They have a group headquarters. They have a Special Operations Support Battalion. They have a line battalion of Green Berets, that 1st Battalion of 20th. But on top of that, we also have two battalions of infantry. I commanded one of them. One of those has an airborne LRS company in it. That's a long-range surveillance. We have a battalion of artillery here in the Alabama National Guard. We have the only EOD group, Explosive Ordnance Disposal. The only bomb disposal group-level headquarters is in the Alabama National Guard. We have a theater sustainment brigade, which is a two-star general-level position. And that theater sustainment, I'm sorry, theater sustainment is actually a TSC. It's not a brigade. That TSC is literally assigned to NORTHCOM to be the logistics manager for NORTHCOM, which is the Homeland Defense in the Alabama National Guard. We have a chemical brigade. And in the Air National Guard, we have the 187th Fighter Wing, which traces its heritage back to the Red Tails of World War II, flying the F-16, I think it's the F-16C. But yeah, we have a KC-135 air refueling tanker wing based in Birmingham. Folks, and I didn't even name it all. We got military police. It's an extremely robust National Guard. And right now, it's on the chopping block. And right now, I'm concerned about what's going to happen when the next call for a 9/11 response happens. And I hope it doesn't, but you have to always be prepared. Do you know what it takes to get a 18 Delta Special Forces medic fully trained, especially in the National Guard? Because they carry all the same qualifications. They go to all the same schools. You don't have reserve component training for that stuff anymore. You go to all the active duty schools. You get highly qualified. And then you still have a civilian job where you have those skills that you bring to play as well. And yet right now, the Pentagon is not even bothering to respond. I don't know where Governor Ivey is on this. I know she doesn't like it, but she's not saying much about it. But she's about to lose 18% of her robust capacity to respond to hurricanes or to support national defense. She is the commander-in-chief of the Alabama National Guard when they're not in federal service. And I'm hearing nothing out of her right now. But then on top of that, I'm looking at Governor Youngkin out of Virginia. He and one of his congressmen just sent a letter 2 weeks ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, a governor of a state, asking for the secretary to please delay this impactful vaccine mandate discharge of their service members. And I'm just telling you right now, it's galling to me that to date, there has been no response from the Secretary of Defense. They're moving forward with axing a huge percentage of our operational National Guard capacity. Folks, coming up next, right after this break, I'm going to bring a friend of mine on who knows this better than most. Retired Colonel Jim Hawkins spent a great deal of time as one of the senior members of Alabama's National Guard. He was also in charge of all the domestic operations related to hurricanes and disaster response. We'll see what he thinks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.